My first official job was in northern Wisconsin. I was the news director at 23 years old. First week, they're like, who is this chick from Chicago? Right. Get her out of here.
Get her
it was
out
fabulous.
Here.
It was a family-owned station. They had all the bells and whistles. It was a capital. It was a college town, so it was actually a great place to be as a young journalist. I learned a ton.
It was actually with the Tribune. It was in 1987. It was a part-time job in the sports department. I was an editorial assistant in the sports department and would collect information on high school games, high school football games, and high school basketball games.
I used to play a game, Beauty Shop, by myself in like the corner and just talk and have conversations about things.
So I kind of had a foot in both worlds from the beginning.
We left and we went to Kuwait, and I think we were gone a total of 6 weeks, 4 in Kuwait and then 2 in Qatar. And what was amazing about that experience was to be able to connect with the Chicago area soldiers who were out there. And so we would drive up the 2-lane highway to Iraq, and then you would turn off, and you know, lo and behold, there would be this huge military city. And we had connections that, you know, hooked us up with folks who were serving from the Chicago area.
Good evening, 708, 720 WGN. It's Andrea Darlis. Thanks for joining us on Andrea and the Reporters. You were just listening to the voices of Barb Markoff, Mary Vandeveld, and John Owens, our panel from last week. You can get that show at WGNradio.com. Our guest tonight, two Chicago journalists born and bred in the Chicago suburbs, two of the best in the business, the king and queen of Greek media, and all of Greek pride tonight. We have Dan Mialopoulos from WBEZ now, but you've been with the Sun-Times, you've been with the Tribune, you've been all over, and everybody knows
you've seen his name,
the one and only Anna Devlantis. Thanks for hanging with us tonight, Anna.
This good is to be awesome. On the show, Andrea.
You know, I say this, and we're going to talk about both of your backgrounds and your careers, and Anna, I love when we get a chance to actually talk and have a conversation, because I know
too.
People know you as a TV star and a radio host, but your roots and your background was the hitting the ground, boots on the street reporting from day one. So I love your stories, and
absolutely.
We were telling so many stories, me, you, and Dan, off the air. I said, wait, hold it,
stop.
Hold it.
Right,
we got to
right.
stop. We got to stop.
Save it for the air.
So I say born and raised Chicago suburbs, Lane Tech, and Maine West High
That's
School.
Right, yeah.
And then, Dan, you went to the University of Missouri School of Journalism, neighboring nearby. Anna, of course, Northwestern.
Rogers Park, I grew up, so
yep.
actually in the city proper.
Yeah,
and
so
then
you,
I went to Chicago Public Schools.
Did you both, and I don't think I even ever asked you this, Anna, mm-hmm. did you both know you always wanted to be reporters, you wanted to be in this business?
Yeah, I think I'm that kid who was on the school paper in elementary school, junior high school. You know, you go to Missouri School of Journalism and they ask everyone in the first big class with 200 people in the auditorium, they say, hey, how many of you were the editor of your high school newspaper? All the hands go up.
Like, I'm not so
them.
Special.
Yeah. By the end of this semester, half of you will have dropped out of journalism. And but I survived. And yeah, it was in newspapers for a long time before I switched to audio last year.
And that was just last year that you went to BEZ.
Right. Last year in June, so about 15 months ago.
What do you think of the change?
Oh, it's a big change, and I've loved it. It's been a blast, you know. I think it's a new way of telling stories, but at the end of the day, what we're doing in either case or in any medium, any platform, as they say in our business, right, is we're trying to find out things that people should know, and sometimes in the case of investigative reporting that both of us
mm-hmm.
have
yeah,
done,
yeah.
Anna and I, over the years, you're trying to find out things that people don't want the public to know.
How challenging is that for both of you? I mean, when you both got your start in investigative reporting, you've won numerous awards, Emmys, and Dan, you've won the Watchdog Award for Excellence. You've broken major stories. How hard is it to get people to talk to you about a subject that maybe isn't too easy to talk about?
I think one of the most rewarding things about doing investigative reporting is that sometimes people aren't ready to hear what you have to say, and you have to go and do the legwork in order to show all the proof and show what you found and get people to talk and find videos if they're available and get all of the data so that people will actually embrace what you have to say. I remember doing stories about wrongful convictions, wrongful mm-hmm. accusations back in the day. And I remember that time I had people in the newsroom who didn't believe that people would sign a confession that for a crime they did not commit. And so why are we going to do this story? This person is obviously lying. Now right. we've learned factors that can contribute to why someone would sign a confession with forceful from actions from police and other things like that, being promised something that doesn't actually pan out, but they don't have access to good counsel. I mean, you can go through the list. Now it becomes clear for people to understand that. But years ago, you didn't know that. And I remember that with the hazing story of the Powder Puff hazing story in Glenbrook North on the North Shore.
That's still one of my favorite stories that you ever did. You broke that story. When was it?
Oh my gosh, it was years ago. Oprah was still at her show because she had me on, and I was like out of my mind. I was like, the first time in my life I couldn't talk. I was like, oh my gosh. The producers actually came out to me when I was on the Oprah show and said, you're going to need to talk more. I'm like, Oprah's talking. I'm not interrupting Oprah. I am not interrupting Oprah.
Tell the story, and I know you've told it. I just love it.
Yeah, no, people might not be that familiar with it because it was years ago, but it was about a game called Powder Puff that the junior and senior girls would do year after year. And in fact, the girls who we interviewed, their mothers had done it, and it was generational. And it started out as just a harmless, you know, football game where they was like, you know, not no contact. And it was a way for junior and senior girls to bond originally. And it became this dramatic hazing thing where there were awful things done and things thrown on girls that were disgusting and things done and violence broke out. And
yeah, they were beaten, right?
They were beaten. And there were girls who went to the hospital and there were horrible things done. And no one believed it. Everyone was, you know, sworn secrecy around it, and no one talked about it, and it was off campus. And then all of a sudden I was able to find out more and more about it, and I obtained one of the videos and put that out there, and people got to see that hazing isn't just a fraternity thing, it isn't just a military thing, it's something that boys and girls can do, young girls can do, you know, girls that are really successful in school can do, you know, anybody is capable of doing it. It's a bullying really on steroids in some ways. And there was something very educational about that. And I will tell you, there was a lot of pushback. I actually had a relative who went to Glenbrook North at the time, and he said, thanks, I have the same last name as you, thank you so much.
Oh,
I mean, we are not popular here. You've brought, you know, scrutiny and scorn to our school. And I'm like, no, it's really your classmates who've done that.
And it had been going on for years, too, this Powder Puff game.
It had been going on for years. And there were many people who reached out after that and said, hey, because of that report, my school now took that seriously. Or I was really badly bullied by groups of people, and they took it more seriously when they saw that. Because they understood that it isn't just girls will be girls and boys will be boys, but sometimes this does rise to another level of, you know, that needs somebody to intervene.
It has to make you feel good that your investigation, your report, you know, you pressed for the truth and you pursued and you got the story out of it.
It does. I mean, I think that there's something rewarding about it. And as Dan will attest to, it's not always easy. And sometimes you run into dead ends and sometimes it doesn't pan out. And sometimes what you think things are not always that way. Right. It does happen.
Sure. I mean, absolutely. You come in sometimes with a tip or with a hunch, but you have to test that against public records. You have to test that against what you find out to be the truth. And sometimes it doesn't pan out, you know, as a story. And people sometimes don't believe that. They think you have a preconceived notion and that you're going to stick to it no matter what. But that's certainly not the way that we operate.
No.
And I don't think any of us in the business here operate that way. You know, you make an excellent point, though, Anna, and it doesn't surprise me at all. Well, I don't think I can say any of my family members have been, you know, giving me that sort of feedback. But certainly there are pros and cons, let's just put it this way, to being a reporter in your own hometown.
Oh,
the pros
sure.
are that, you know, you know a lot of people that can tell you things and you kind of maybe have an organic feel for what's going on that others who are non-natives may not instinctively have. On the other hand, you know, there are many, many circumstances where, you know, it's not such a big town at the end of the day. And so you will hear feedback from people. I could tell you, I've written about someone who's a Greek American. I don't want to name names.
No.
I saw him at church a couple of weeks ago, and this was someone that ended up in federal prison. And, you know, that's I went to a different parish.
Yeah.
And, I saw him. And, you know, It's kind of awkward.
Well, your story, I mean, you had a big investigative story when you worked for the Sun-Times, and it actually led to, it was investigative piece on Chicago Public Schools, I believe, and that's when Forrest Claypool was found the door, found the exit door.
Yes.
And it was your work on that. But well done, you know, because it was a wrong that had to be right.
Well, I think like a lot of things in that case, there were the efforts to, I don't want to say cover up, but no, I think, in fact, the inspector general who is there at CPS to look at these sort of matters, certainly saw, it's a matter of public record, that he saw our stories and began asking questions. And then, you know, infamously, Forrest Claypool and the administration got 7 different legal opinions to tell them that what I had reported on was legit. 6 of those opinions told them that it was a violation of the ethics code, and the 7th, rather dubious opinion, said that it was okay. But in the process, there was a cover-up alleged by the IG, and the inspector general there called for his resignation, and he resigned. You know, I like to say that at WBZ now in our newsroom, one of my other colleagues did the stories that led to the resignation and the federal charges ultimately against Claypool's predecessor, Barbara Bird Bennett.
Yes.
Who I think is still in federal prison. Right. And that reporter was Sarah Karp. We're both from Chicago, both, you know, born on the north side, both classmates. She was actually my editor at the University of Missouri. So we sit near each other, and it's a small world.
It is a very small world. We're talking to two of Chicago's very own, Dan Mialopoulos and Anna DeFlantis, and we'll be back after this on 720 WGN. 720 on WGN. It's Andrea Darlis. Andrea and the reporters tonight, it's Anna DeFlantis and Dan Mialopoulos from WBEZ. Now, you both have had long and successful careers in the Chicago media. Dan, you've been with the Times, the Tribune, now BEZ, and of course with Channel 5, with Fox, and now WGN. How easy has the transition been from, Dan, for you, print to radio, Anna, TV to radio, to back TV? And I ask this because it's kind of a loaded question. I think I know the answer, that each has a little bit of a different challenge, but how easy, because I listen to Dan on BEZ, and it's like I've been listening to him my whole life. I listen to you and Ro, and it's like you've been a talk show host your whole life, yet you had this whole other career as a TV reporter on Channel 5. You had this whole other, and award-winning too, I should add, multi-award-winning career. How hard has the transition been?
Yeah,
easy?
I'd been on a lot of radio stations, including WBZ, and on TV a number of times before I made the transition from the payroll of the Sun-Times to the payroll of WBZ. Also, I have to thank my editors and colleagues for their patience, and you know, they're getting pretty practiced at training print people who are transitioning into broadcast, into audio. And so I've also embraced it. I mean, it's a lot of fun. The first time I put on the headphones, had my Marantz, had my shotgun mic, the WBZ logo on it. Yeah. It's just another tool. It's just another sort of notebook to fill with. And I started ad-libbing a little bit, which I thought was just my kind of nervous habit when I'm trying to find somebody that doesn't want to be interviewed. But sometimes that stuff works. I mean, you can incorporate it into your audio features or into your stories that you play on the radio.
So. And it seems nowadays especially, everybody's doing everything. Radio, TV, a little bit of blogging.
Right. It
Facebook,
does seem
social media.
That even if you work for a TV station, you're writing for the page, and you're on Facebook, and you're on the website for the station, and you're pushing out stuff on social media and videos, your private stuff. I mean, it is kind of important, I think, and what I would tell a young journalist or someone who has an aspiring journalist in their family is to get well versed on all that stuff. I mean, most of them are coming out of these journalism schools now. They know how to edit. They know how to, you know, make their own videos and audio and podcasts. I had some, like, we had some really young kids in here. They really were like 14 and 15 years old, and they were already doing their own podcasts, and they knew the importance of being able to do not just video, but all of the different things. And
right,
then honing
right.
your writing skills as well, which is ultimately really important.
Oh, absolutely. Was it Judy Pilak's class, by the way?
No, there was a different one.
Okay,
Marley Wells.
Did she have a group in?
They were beyond impressive. I mean, beyond impressive.
Isn't
they were
amazing?
14 and 15 years old, already seem like legit journalists and doing their thing in the podcast world, and I'm very impressed by them.
I had a tour a couple of months back, and same thing, Anna. They were young students, and the first thing they asked about was podcasting. Podcasting and FaceTime Live.
They were so into the podcasting.
Yeah.
But for me, the transition from television to radio, one of the things that I've enjoyed, and yes, they're all super challenging. We talked about some of the challenges of investigative reporting, but coming over to radio, this is more about a conversation around topics, and that I enjoy. It's also challenging, but it's to not use visuals. I think when you first dump the visual portion of your storytelling, you're like, whoa, that's half my story. I'm used to writing the visuals. That's what they teach you in television, and then you come over to radio, and it's more about the audio and the sound and the conversation.
I knew a journalist who would, a hardcore journalist like both of you, who every time she would fly or take a flight, she'd get the Star and the National Enquirer and the People magazine. And she said, this is how I detox.
Escape.
This is how I escape. When you each go home, are you popping on CNN? Are you putting on, are you watching the national media or are you reading the paper or are you unwinding? Are you like a Downton Abbey or Game of Thrones? What's kind of your...
I'm guilty of watching too much news and reading too much. I'm absorbing constantly content. But since my little one, I read her stories at night. And so that's my escape. So we sit there in bed for like half an hour, 40 minutes, and we read, like the Very Hungry Caterpillar. Right now she's into, we have our Halloween books out or stuff like that. But like all the Eric Carle books she loves. I mean, it's fun. It's
right.
So fun.
That's your escape.
That is.
Your daughter's
right
books.
Now.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I have a 9-year-old, you got to do her Greek school homework with her.
We're going to talk about the Greek school, too, after the news.
But yeah, she's a kind of a bit of a mini news junkie herself, Juliana, and she, she comes over to the studio and she says, is that Dave McKinney over there?
State she's
reporter.
Nine.
Hey, Dave, do you think that that Trump is going to let Blago out of prison? And I'm like,
Both of your daughters, Anna, you had your daughter at the Walk of Fame, not this year, but the year before, I believe, when Mary Vandeville was inducted. And if I'm not mistaken, she was going around like doing little mock questions.
She was.
She's hilarious.
Very talkative. She's very into the whole, asking people things about themselves and finding out about them and what they do and what they like, what they're interested in.
Is that okay with both of you? Would you want your children going into the business?
We both went, ooh.
I know you both did. The grimace face there. Would that be okay?
Well, there's no question
reporters?
The media is changing. Right? The landscape is changing. We saw the Tribune Tower where our beautiful radio station used to be is now luxury condos.
Yes.
You've seen the consolidation of the media world. And that's, but you've also seen new voices come to the space. People have voices in social media. They have podcasts that we just discussed. And so there is more inclusion as much as there is a little bit of a shakeout in traditional media. I just think it's a tough time to assess what the opportunities are, and maybe if they want to do it, they do it. If she wants to do it, I would stand behind her.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's something when they're exposed to journalism from a young age. I think that I've seen other people that I work with whose parents were, Vietnam War correspondents, like Evan Asnos. We worked together
at the Tribune.
He's a New Yorker writer. And you do see that it's not so much an advantage, like they have clout in the business. It's more like, they've seen you do it. They've heard you talk about it, and they kind of absorb a lot of that. And, I didn't really have that experience, but I did have parents who were socially conscious. My dad, I think, was reading Time magazine within a few years when I was a little kid of coming to America. And you also absorb that, too. But certainly, I didn't have any family with a background in journalism.
No, I didn't either. But my dad he never really wanted the TV on during dinner. It was not allowed. But when Walter Jacobson was on perspective,
da, 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 da.
Everyone was quiet. That came on. We listened. And then we'd have a conversation about it. So I think that was kind of similar to your story, Dan, in that they were socially conscious. They wanted to know about what was going on in the community. It really mattered to them. And so then I think when you have that background, you take it very seriously what you do, because you realize not everyone in the whole world has a chance to go down to City Hall and figure out what's going on. They're relying on Dan to tell them what's going on.
Right. We're talking to Anna DeVlantis and Dan Mialopoulos. We're going to talk more about family, but first, quick break in the news. After this, 720 WGN. Thank you, Dan. Welcome back to Andrea and the Reporters. Right. Dan Mialopoulos and Anna DeVlantis, my guests tonight. Two of the best in the business, two of Chicago's very own. And before the break, I thought this was so cool. We continued the conversation a little bit off the air. I'd love to bring it on the air because I think this will really warm people's hearts. When you each talk about your family and who inspired you, and you both had such strong, and I think a lot of it is the Greek factor too. People say, oh, you guys all related. Well, yeah, we're all cousins, we're all family, but it is from that very strong, Anna, you had a very, very strong family connection and still do, and we talk about it, and even when we're not talking about Greek restaurants and Greek food.
Yeah, no, it's true.
You know?
It's true. I mean, we were just saying we had no real, Dan and I both didn't have any real connections in the business. I really had zero connections in the business. I didn't know anybody who was a journalist. Our neighbors were nowhere near. They were city workers and did other kinds of things like that. Teachers, a lot of educators in my family, but no one did anything like that. So it was sort of a bizarre thing. My dad sort of thought it was show business. He didn't really love the idea. He's like, you're going to be on TV? Or like, what? I mean, he was like, all right, you want to do it? Go do it. But it was sort of, at first, sort of seemed weird to them. But it's, you know, it's, I think it's a calling, because I think ultimately he understood that it was really, it's about information. And it's about figuring out things to communicate to people. Not everybody, we're sort of the window to city hall and government and everything going on within a city when you're a reporter. When you do that as a living, I took that responsibility really as a big deal. It was a big deal to me, because I thought about my dad and other people like that who relied on the news after working hard day at work. This is where I'm going to get my information.
And you said you'd watch Walter's Perspective.
Oh, yeah. Did I not say that on the air?
And came full circle.
We would break at dinner, because we were never allowed to watch TV. We were limited to TV, but we at dinner time never had the TV on. Obviously, there were no iPads or anything like that. Not at all. Nowhere near it. But there would be, you know, my dad would, when Walter's Perspective would on, he knew exactly what time it was on, and we would turn that on. He'd take it in, and then we'd kind of talk about it as a family, you know, even if we were pretty young.
Who inspired you as a young reporter?
I think I love Chicago reporters. I mean, we have just been blessed in this town with some of the best in the business. So if you grow up here, it's almost hard to watch news anywhere else, because people here, I just take it seriously. They're so good at it. They're so good at, I think of just the entire community of Chicago. I mean, I grew up watching Bill Curtis and Walter Jacobson and the Channel 2's people of the world, but then Carol Marine and so many others over the years. Just, it's so good here. And then reading people like John Cass and before him, Royko. I'd read all Royko's books.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, the legendary people who have covered news in this town. It's just, it's amazing.
Would you ever write a book?
I think, you know, when the hazing story happened, everyone came to me and said, you've got to write a book about this. You've got to write a book. And I thought about it, but I was too busy to really focus on it. I think you have to come across that one piece that you want to really live with for a year, however long it takes to birth a book. And it does take a long time if you really put your all into it. When you come across that subject, I think you know it. And Dan, you've probably covered things where you're like, wow, I could really dig in deep on this issue. It's, do you have the time to do it, and do you want to?
Right.
Right, and you're trying to make a living, you know, on a day-to-day basis, and break stories and you know, keep up with the news that's going on. And here the story never ends, you know. It's just, it's a great news town. And, I mean, talking about family, I would go back to, again, my parents and my extended family were not anywhere near the news business, all, you know, pretty much off the boat, right, as we say amongst ourselves, at least. And at the same time, though, when I left my family and came into society, basically non-Greek society, growing up in a house where more Greek was spoken than English, where everything that we ate was Greek, coming into the broader society, I was surprised that not everyone was interested in the news, because my uncles and my grandfather, everybody was interested in the news. And so, again, although it was not a predominantly English-speaking household when I was a young boy, I think that my mom now, known as Yaya Despina, she used to say, Yaya Despina, when she was...
We all laugh because we all have a Despina
have
in the family.
Yeah, Yaya Despina, for sure.
Yeah, or Maria. But when I was an infant, I guess I wouldn't fall asleep until I heard the Channel 2 news theme song.
So
that's what I'm told. Exactly.
All right, before, I know, Anna, you have another commitment tonight as well, and I want to thank you for hanging out. I love
being a part of the show. I love seeing you, Andrea.
Me too. If you guys could just real quickly tell, you both found yourself covering the very same story in Greece.
We did. The Olympics.
We found ourselves working at almost the same exact time in the very center of Athens, I would say, in the main square across from the parliament.
2008?
2004 Athens Summer Olympics.
Okay.
And I think we were both sent primarily because of our long last
our heritage.
Names.
Like you. That's that your, we'll send you, Devlantis.
Right. Devlantis and Miolopoulos. Right.
In my case, it was more like, you have experience covering 9/11, and we're afraid that the Greeks will mess it up and some terrorist attack
that
will
was
happen.
The
so
issue.
We want someone that knows Greek to be around in case of terrorism. And
were you both worried that they wouldn't finish the airport or the stadium on time?
That was all the talk. That was all the stories, right? Moving up into the date.
Oh, I mean, they were working on it till the last minute. I did go a few weeks earlier. I think I took vacation right before the Olympics in Greece, and you'd literally you'd stop to get to gas up your car, and you'd see them paving a road, and they're like another 50 yards down by the time you've filled up your tank of gas. They're like paving.
It's like,
it
keep out. Going. We need
right.
you.
It's like Speed with Keanu Reeves, where they're looking at the map. They didn't finish the bridge. It's the same
and
thing.
They had those big, I don't know, they were almost like movie set style, like, what were they, sheets of something to cover the lots that they didn't finish. So they came up with these kind of window dressing for anything that was not finished. It was like, all right, that didn't get done. But it still was beautiful. It was a beautiful, beautiful
was it? Was
time.
It both of one of your favorite stories that you ever covered?
I think so.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. It was moving.
Being in
yeah.
the homeland?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very much so. I went to my dad's village, which I'd never been to before, and I asked, my Greek is not so good, so I brought a friend with me, and they translated, they said, well, where's the Devlantis in this town? And they said, Devlantis is over here, he's over here, he's over here.
It's like
he's here, he's here. He's, look around, he's everywhere. Which one you want? I'm like, oh my gosh, I didn't realize it was that. I didn't know my name was popular.
Oh, Anna, thank you so much.
Thanks. Good
we're
to see
let you
both.
You,
good to see you, Dan.
Pleasure, yeah.
We're
mm-hmm.
going to let Anna take her leave here, and we're going to have more with Dan on Andre and the Reporters after this on 720 WGN.
7:45 on 720 WGN. Anna Devlantis, Dan Miolopoulos from WBEZ. My guest tonight on Andrea and the Reporters. Dan, you're a two-time winner. Thank you for being here. This is so much fun.
It's been a joy.
With you and Anna, I feel like we're just kind of sitting in a restaurant here having a cup of coffee and having
bring
a chat.
Bring another carafe of Regina here.
This is why I love you, though, too, because you drink as much coffee as I do.
That's right. That's right. I usually drink Turkish. We're drinking Pepa Nicholas coffee.
Right?
To
go along with
the
theme
in
our green room, yeah. Do you drink the Greek? The Greek and the Turkish coffee is...
It's pretty much the
same
thing,
my grandma used to call it... What's gunpowder in Greek? That's what my Aya used to call it.
I'm not sure, yeah.
She used to call it gunpowder, and you know, it's like sludge.
Oh, it's,
but
I
it's
love
good
it,
sludge.
Yeah, there's a machine. They make it in Turkey. I have one. Actually, Odette Youssef, my colleague who's of Egyptian heritage... told me, oh, you know, there's a machine that can make Greek and Turkish coffee in like 1 minute.
You need to send me that.
I will definitely hook you up with that technological advancement that the Turks have come up with, you know, to their credit.
I'm like you, though. I can drink coffee at 3, 4, 5 in the afternoon. I know a lot of people say, don't drink it after 2 or 3. You won't be able to fall asleep.
Yeah, my dad
says 4. I
sleep
like a baby.
Yeah. I don't have any problem falling asleep.
But you know, it's funny because my parents were news junkies, too. So we'd always watch the 10 o'clock news. My parents would have coffee. They weren't drinking decaf back then. Yeah.
Decaf.
Dan, you're a two-time winner of the Headline Club's Watchdog for Excellence Award in Public Interest Reporting, and you got the Ann Keegan Award. That's a big award that we give out in journalism at the Headline Club last year for your feature story about immigrants. Let's talk a little bit about this. This is one of the coolest stories I think you've ever reported on.
Yeah, it was a very moving experience. It was about a woman who is an undocumented immigrant from Mexico. I've stayed in touch with her. She's doing well. But, you know, when I met her, she was uninsured and had a very, very bad prognosis, like months to live. This was a couple years ago when I started reporting the story, and a local immigration lawyer named Rosalba Pina, who's Mexican-American, she connected me with Magdalena, and yeah, I've got to make sure not to say her last name because she asked, being undocumented,
sure,
that we only use her first name.
Yeah.
And Magdalena needed help, and eventually they took her at Rush and gave her the very costly medical procedures that have allowed her, she's in her early 40s, I believe, and it's allowed her to live. And, you know, it's a little bit different than the kind of reporting we were talking about earlier in the hour, the investigative reporting.
Right.
Although, you know, you have to bring the same intellectual rigor and thoroughness to your reporting, whether it's a human story, as we say in the business, or more of a straight investigative story, you know, based on documents,
sure,
and Freedom of Information Act requests and whatnot, and anonymous sources. But in this case, she lives in northern Indiana, and we went with her to a lot of her appointments at Rush, and you know, the day that she had the big procedure, and it was very, very moving experience. I think for me particularly, I think you mentioned the Ann Keegan Award.
Yeah.
When I accepted that, discussed a little bit my own background in an immigrant family.
Right.
I think we all have what we bring to the table, right, of our life experiences. And part of my life experience was coming from an immigrant family. Another part was learning Spanish here in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And in
you're fluent
suburbs.
In Spanish.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, claro. Claro. Así se hace. But I learned Spanish, I think, partly because I already knew Greek, you know. Mm-hmm. And also, I wanted the other guys to pass me the ball on the football.
See, that's cool.
So, you're a big soccer fan. that helped to practice what I was learning in school on the soccer field with my teammates, who were in many cases, you know, immigrants from Mexico and other Latin American countries.
When you cover these stories, I mean, this was a very moving and powerful story, and you received accolades, and of course the Ann Keegan for the story and for what you did and your contributions. How hard is it to go from being investigative to doing, this was more of a human interest kind of a story, and not letting emotions get in the way? Because this is obviously a very emotional story. It's about a young woman, I say young, in her 40s, obviously. Yeah. But going for medical treatment, didn't have the money, was undocumented, had to be anonymous. I mean, it's an emotional story. So how do you tell it without letting the best of your emotions get to you?
That's a good question, and it was a very, very emotional experience. Not only the medical procedures that she was going through, but she spent some time while she was being treated in the Chicago area at a sanctuary church in Waukegan, in downtown Waukegan, where there were other people living in pretty harsh, pretty Spartan conditions, mm-hmm, with a small s, of course.
Yes.
And, you know, with a little boy that she has and a couple other kids that were a little bit older in their teens at that time, a couple of years ago. It's very hard to separate your emotions. But at the end of the day, you know, we tried to put it in the context of healthcare for the undocumented and sort of present the issues sort of within the story. I mean, that's, you know, 2,000-3,000 word story. It's a lot longer than what we usually would have in the Sun-Times, which is where it was published, where I worked at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would have been a good audio story or television story too, because of the human element in there. It is a different approach in that you're working with people that are not used to being interviewed. And so you have to have a little bit more flexibility and more of an effort to make them comfortable and to make them trust you, as opposed to someone who maybe on the investigative side is trying to conceal something,
right,
or spin something. And maybe I shouldn't say spin, but, you know, they're trying to make it look like something that you might see differently.
It's often, I guess this is probably the adage that you should listen 70% of the time and speak 30% of the time, as opposed to the other part when you're being the investigative reporter.
Oh, absolutely.
A lot of listening.
Almost, you almost want to be a fly on the wall, right? But it's really impossible, whether you have just a notebook as a print journalist or you have the whole crew and equipment of a broadcast journalist. You really are trying to kind of melt into the background, and it's really difficult. Some of the doctors were sort of resistant.
Oh, sure,
to my being around.
Yeah.
And whatnot. So you're trying to talk less, certainly, than your and listen a lot more, maybe even 90-10.
Is part of being a good reporter being a little sympathetic?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, people can tell if I don't know about sympathetic, but certainly empathetic.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And you know, I think there's two lines in the this sort of immersion journalism and telling these human stories. There's a line between empathetic and sympathetic, and then there is, but certainly you're sympathetic to her health situation,
right.
If not to the politics of you know, who's paying for health care for the undocumented. But and then on the other side with investigative, you have to be skeptical but not cynical. So these are
exactly,
very
yeah.
fine lines, and,
for sure.
and this is, these are the lines that we try to toe in those kinds of stories, which are very different in some cases.
What was one of the most memorable stories that you ever covered? Maybe not necessarily one that was the biggest or that you won an award for, but something that really stands out for you. Boy, whether it was a long time ago.
That's a tough question. I mean, I was in newspapers for 20 years,
yeah.
almost 25 years, and I've been in radio for more than a year now. And I think to pick one story that
it's hard, right? It's like, so who's your favorite child, your favorite parent? I know it's hard. I asked this question, and people will ask me that too. You know, what was the greatest story you ever covered, or the most memorable? And I'll sometimes say 9/11 or whatever, like a big story that comes to mind. But there was a story one time, and I've told this on the air before, that a woman had called. This is maybe 10 years ago, and at Navy Pier they were putting in a new ride. It was a tethered hot air balloon, and a woman called and said, "I loved your cover." And I thought, oh my God, it was a hot air balloon at Navy Pier. Big deal, right? And she said, she went on and on about, she loved how I described the skyline and the sun was setting and the colors. And again, I'm kind of thinking, okay, where, you know, this is the big story that you enjoyed. And she said, well, I recently lost my sight. And she said, I'm blind, and you brought all these colors and drew this picture for me. So that's the story that I'll sometimes tell. It's like, wow, you know, that was such an impactful story to somebody. And to me, I thought, okay, I'm covering an attraction at Navy Pier.
But so, everybody's hearing it through their own prism.
Exactly. Do you find that too, that people see things a little bit differently or hear things a little differently?
Oh, absolutely. And we know it more now within the era of social media more than ever, that, you know, people will ascribe different motivations to different investigative stories that you do. And people like to guess all the time, you know, whose bidding are you doing? Who gave you that tip? And so often they're so wrong.
I know, right?
And you have to protect the anonymity of your tipsters and your sources.
Sure.
But you know, I go around the city now, and almost every, with my family or with friends, and almost every corner, every neighborhood has a story for me and a backstory of how we got that story.
Isn't it cool?
And yeah.
And you've lived here your whole life, and now you probably still, to this day, after being in this field for so long, see it just a little bit differently every day.
It is a small town sometimes in the connections that you see, but it's also a huge area. I mean, it's really a blessing to be a reporter in your hometown, in the sense that, you know, we're a city that, you know, every neighborhood has their restaurants. We're talking about the restaurants in
yeah.
your neighborhood, which I know pretty well.
Yes, yes.
And then we're, you know, you talk about people and their favorite pizzeria or whatnot, and they all are very parochial. It's a city of neighborhoods, as they say. Well, this job lets us get out of that bind. And so, you know all these places. I had to go to the east side of all places a bunch of times. There's a lot of people don't even know there is an east side.
Right, Pullman, sure. Yeah, Avenue C and Hedwish.
Yeah, 106th and Avenue C. And, mm-hmm. and that there, a lot of people wouldn't even know that the grid goes that far east.
Right.
As some of those locations there. But yeah, I went there a bunch of times on a story probably about a dozen years ago. And I just found it a fascinating area. You know, people say, well, Chicago didn't become like Detroit. Or it didn't become like Cleveland. It didn't become this stereotypical Rust Belt place because we have this gleaming downtown. Well, go to the east side and, you know,
sure.
they're still talking about when the steel mills closed.
That's right.
I mean, Cass was covering it, John Cass,
yeah.
For the Daily Calumet back when it happened
mm-hmm.
in the early 80s. That's a little bit before our time, you know. So you get to go to a lot of different places around town, and it's really something that opens your eyes to the many different worlds that are within the city.
Dan, thank you for the work that you do. Thank you for the stories that you cover. Where can people find you?
They can find me at WBEZ.org. We have an app. It's 91.5 FM, and you know, I think we're pretty close in the ratings, so probably I should cut it.
That's we're right up. We're
off
right
at an hour.
We're all
here.
Friends. No, I hear. And I'm going to ask you the same question before we go that I asked Anna. You've covered such great stories. You have such a great story, a backstory of your own. Would you ever write a book? Do I see a book in Dan Mialopoulos's future?
I might probably do a podcast before I do a book.
Would it be human interest, or would it just be general assignment?
Oh, I think that they're both. I think that there's a lot of human interest stories in politics. I mean, if you look at the podcast that my colleagues did around the time that I started over at WBZ on Rod Blagojevich.
Oh, yes.
You know, I let my kid listen to it.
Did you really?
7, 8 years
old. Oh, no. That's a great education.
But, you know, she loved it. And, you know, if you talk about stories that are engrossing to people, it's a political story, but it's also a human story. And if it can hold the attention of a 7, 8-year-old, even a precocious one who's interested in the news, I think that that's the kind of stories that we're looking for, stories that are impactful, but also moving to people.
And what do you do to get away? What's your escape? I know Devlantis reads children's books and spends time with your daughter. What's kind of your release?
Yeah, we spent a lot of time with the family. I think my favorite thing in the city, you can probably tell from my expanding waistline, is the restaurants of
yes.
Chicago. And I'm partial to various Mediterranean cuisines, Mexican food. I mean, that's one of the things about my job is that you get to different neighborhoods. And so when you see like the Streets and Sandman's Guide to Chicago Eats, you know, I can probably write a book like that.
I'm right there with you. We'll start in Greektown, and then we'll make our way backwards. Huge thanks to Anna Devlantis and Dan Mialopoulos from WBEZ. You can find all of your works online at WBEZ.org, and your stories that we talked about too, that you've won the awards for, Sun Times and Tribune. Just do a search. It's common spelling, Dan Mialopoulos.
Yep.
Thank you so much, Dan. Katika. Katika to you as well. John Hanson in next for Justin Coffin on Extension 720.